Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, diving into a trade that I made here on this Thursday. It's an interesting trade, and some of the stuff we're talking about in terms of core assets and that, this is certainly sort of right up that alley. So I wanted to talk a little bit about it just to break down my own specific one. And so you get an idea of kind of how I play a little bit. This is a start one quarterback league. I've been in it for 10 years. It's my first dynasty league. And I won it this past year. I'd gotten close several times before, top point getter, right, second end points. Like I've sort of been up there, runner up, a couple of times as well, like in the last 5 years, third place finishes. And I just had gotten to basically right near the end and just hadn't done it. So in 17, I was the runner up. In 18, I was the runner up. In fifth, in 19 was really my down year. I finished fifth in points and I lost in the first round. 2020, I was second in points. I finished third in the league. And then in 2021, I won it. So again, you get the idea. Like this is a perennial contender. And in the team I have, Rodgers, right? It's a start one league. So I have Rodgers. And entering this trade, I had Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery, and Travis Etienne. So I had a blend there of youth, age, kind of across the spectrum there of basically six top 20 running backs. And then I had some HHGs, guys familiar, Madison, in particular leading that charge there, Jamal Williams, Darrell Williams, so some interchangeable guys there kind of down the dials, Boston Scott and some other guys there that I'll probably end up cutting. But, I've got a good core there at running back. And then at receiver, this is where I'm thin, right? I've borrowed from here to play elite at some other positions. But again, I've got the types of guys that I want in terms of they're very, projectable year over year. So that's Keenan Allen, Odell Beckham Jr., Brandon Cooks, Amari Cooper. And then Mark Andrews, Cole Kmet at tight end, right? And it's a 24-man roster. So, there's a couple of guys in there. I didn't mention, the backup running back types. But yeah, so you kind of get the idea. Like, this is a good team, very good team. Coming off championship, if there's an incentive for me to win it again in terms of a progressive pot, it's about the size of a buy-in, right? So that'll be that'll add to basically the prize pool for me in a meaningful way, right? So it'll make it, I think, makes it like 5x or something winning, right? So that's a good payoff. So I've thought about this a lot, and I was recording all this stuff for the core assets, for the hierarchy of assets stuff that we're going through this week, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, listen, I like Jonathan Taylor. But when you go back and look over the past few years, he's really been the lowest scoring running back one. And that's not a knock on him. But I think, we come at this with a prior of, hey, oh man, running back one. Well, there's different magnitudes of that, right? There's the running back one that is an enormous running back one, right? And then there's a running back one that's like the Devontae Freeman running back one. When you go back and look at history going back to 2012, you see you kind of see where JT ranks. So in 2021, points per game in PPR, he had 22.2. In 2020, it would have been Kamara and Cook at 25.2. And it was Kamara and 24.1 for Dalvin. In 2019, McCaffrey had 29.3. In 2018, McCaffrey had 24.2. Barkley had 24. Gurley, right there as well. He actually had 26 that year, but missed a couple games. Kamara had 23.2. That year, Jonathan Taylor's 2021 season would have been the fifth running back, right? 2017, it would have been third behind Gurley and Le'Veon Bell. Gurley had 25.8. Bell had 23. In 2016, it would have been DJ with 25.1. Actually, Le'Veon Bell finished with 26.4 points per game, but finished third because he missed a couple games. So that year, JT would have been third. Devonta Freeman was really the down season of like the last you know, this half of the decade and beginning of this decade, with 21.4. The next highest that year was 17, so that was a big difference over what was behind him. Le'Veon Bell in 2014 with 23.2 and DeMarco Murray with 22.6, so JT would rank third that year. Charles with 25.5 back in 2013, and AP in 2012 had 21.8 points. So that year would have been JT ranking as first. So over the last 9 seasons, he would have ranked first twice, second twice. He would have ranked third 4 times, and he would have ranked fifth once. So he's more likely to be. His point total this year in terms of the points that he scored, again, you have to sort of adjust for the fact that, yeah, they played an extra game, but in terms of just where his points per game would average amongst the guys that basically played a full season, his would have been more likely to have been 3 or later than a top 2 finish. So again, I like Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor is a fan of mine. We liked him in rookie drafts. But I think it would be, I think it's clear here that he's a really good player, and there's no doubt about that. I think he deserves to be the running back 1. But I think it's clear if you're willing to sort of say, well, all right, is having him the most absolute optimized running back? And I don't think so. I think in any setting, right, there's no one that has the ceiling of Christian McCaffrey. They just don't. And so that would be the big thing, I think, is just a difference. McCaffrey just has a ceiling that I don't think anyone else can get to in terms of what he can offer. When you look back, you know, this year he had 18.2 points per game. In his short sample size in 2019, he had 30.1. Again, you heard some of his other listings in there, 29.3, 24.2. You know, so, I mean, if he's been healthy, he's outscored Jonathan Taylor. That's basically it. And even when he hasn't been healthy, he has, played in short sample sizes, right? He's still been right there about. So I do think that's a big part of this, you know, coming from my depth too. Like, I have guys that are frankly pretty close to Jonathan Taylor, right? And I think I have guys that I think McCaffrey can absolutely, you know, shred the ceiling. So the deal ends up becoming, you know, so I've been thinking a lot about this in terms of the star assets too. And, you know, as I sort of view these things, star assets, basically top 5 running backs, I got basically 5 of them up there. It's JT, it's Swift, it's Najee Harris, it's McCaffrey, and it's Javonte Williams, right? That's kind of the 5 guys up there. I'll say this. I think that there's there's a difference in value, right? And that's the big thing that we talk about. Like, they're not all just the same. You don't just treat them all the same, right? There's a difference in value in terms of market perception, in terms of ceiling floor combination as well, right? In terms of some of the security that you do feel, right, you're going to feel different about them. And that's good. You should feel that, right? I think the difference between McCaffrey and Taylor is, simply put, I think McCaffrey is older. I think McCaffrey carries a little bit more perceived injury risk, and I think that he carries a little bit more perceived value risk, right? I think, you know, Jonathan Taylor is younger. I think he's probably got a lower ceiling, but maybe he does have a higher floor. It depends on what you want to value, right? For me in this, I'm just trying to get as much ceiling as I possibly can. And that matters a lot to me, considering that I have guys that, you know, frankly, if Taylor gets hurt, sorry, if McCaffrey gets hurt, I have ways to fill in for him, right? A healthy Barkley, right? Kamara, right? Etienne, Swift, right? I got Montgomery. Like, I have guys that I can play in that spot in the event, and I'm insured against that, right? It's not ideal. I want McCaffrey to play every game, but if McCaffrey doesn't, my team's not shot. I also don't think, based on some of the stuff, that he's like injury prone. Like, this isn't like, he's got like a chronic hamstring issue, right? This is a high ankle sprain, a shoulder. I think he had like a hip thing too, so it's been kind of a little bit of a variety of stuff. And he hasn't been a player that has been particularly vulnerable to injury. Right. That's the other thing. He's injury prone. Well, he's not. He hasn't. I mean, the past couple of years he's been injured, but that like he really hadn't been up to that point in his career, right? This wasn't a player who had missed a lot of time. And I know that some of the criticism is he's small. We've kind of seen him handle a workload, and this isn't like he can't. It's just in the past couple of years, like he separated his shoulder and he got his ankle rolled up, right? I don't think that's, that's not really injury prone. That stuff happens. So that's really the angle that I have on that. I think McCaffrey just has a higher ceiling. So the trade was simple. I offered JT to the McCaffrey person. GM had finished, I think they're picking 102 this year. So it wasn't a good team. But I offered Jonathan Taylor for McCaffrey and a 2023 first to start one league. But I said, listen, like there's a way to capture ceiling here. And listen, I think that pick, I can use that pick to potentially address some receiver help if I need to. I can potentially get younger at quarterback if I need to. I could hold on to it if I need to. Right? It gives me some flexibility. But I'm hunting ceiling, right? This is what this entire team is about at this point. And I keep backfilling, right? Like I keep backfilling in terms of, being willing to move down or to take, ETN last year, right? And just say, all right, I'm just going to sort of cycle him back at the back end of my position. I'm not going to draft for need. I'll figure out need in a trade. I'll figure out need in some other move. I just keep backfilling the position. And, that has allowed me to add ETN, right? That's adding Swift. That's adding Taylor, right? To a team that had, I had Mixon at one point and was able to trade off of him. But, I made those decisions while having Kamara, while having Barkley. Right? You just keep adding to it, and that's kind of how you end up with a team that could be a perennial contender, right? That's constantly playing into the second or third playoff week. So, again, now I'll have my own first this year, which is 112, and then I'll have, two firsts in 2023. So we'll see where those end up. Hopefully one will be 112 and the other one will be really early, that one not being my own. So that's really the rationale for the deal. And I said, I think that this is a shot that I can take. Would I have loved to have been super flex? Yeah, I think that would have been better for the quality of the pick. But I don't think, I can imagine at some point in the next year making a trade involving, amping up, whether that's my receivers, getting some receiving help. I could see myself doing something like that to really keep my ceiling high and using that pick to do it. Or, if I get in season and I say, hey, listen, this guy's not contending and he's going to be a top three pick, I just hold on to it, or I could trade mine or whatever, right? I've got all those options in front of me, and I've got the ability to make 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more trades to make this team better. A lot of different ways to do it and a lot of different players on the menu as well. So that's the reason for the deal. People would ask me, hey, can you explain this? I put it out on Twitter. That's the explanation. So, again, I don't think this is a deal you maybe do, if you're kind of like a middling team, right? Because there's, I think, some risk there in terms of, right, if McCaffrey doesn't play well this year, right, he could definitely be a falling value situation. But I've basically insulated that a couple of ways. I insulated it because I have a good team. I've got players surrounding him that I kind of view it like basketball. Like, listen, if you trade for a point guard and he gets hurt, but you have a bunch of other guys on your team that can handle the ball, and you're basically just taking a shot on a guy that'll just amp up the ceiling even further, and he gets hurt, you have other solutions to that problem, it's okay. When you don't and your point guard gets hurt, you're in a lot of trouble. And that's kind of how I view this. I have a lot of leeway on this team. And so if this trade, I think this trade could work out in a way that really makes it, that can make a win difference for me and push for a bye, right? That's basically all I'm trying to do at this point, is push for a bye and push for a championship. I think that this gives you a better shot at a bye. And even if something happens with Kamara, I've got it insulated with the pick, with the other players, right? I mean, it's, a difference between a guy like Kamara and JT or, Montgomery. I can mix and match those guys, right? And maybe can even overperform, whatever their average is. And with, trying to rotate between, 4, 5, 6 guys that are in the top 20 each week, I can kind of replicate getting closer up the board from their natural, if they finish running back 8, I probably can outperform that playing some matchups and some spot situations and the like there. So that's really the rationale behind the deal, but I wanted to dive into that. Again, so this is a little bit different format. I'm trying out some new things this offseason in terms of formats. I figured this was an easy one to talk about a trade. That'll do it for this edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We will talk again very soon.